It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. Marijuana legalization in one form or another is on the ballot this year in an unprecedented number of states. Voters in five states will decide whether to fully legalize recreational use, most prominently with California's Proposition 64. Voters in four more states will weigh in on whether to allow medical marijuana. This has long been an issue that was on the back burner for politicians. Usually, only outsider candidates would advocate for marijuana policy reform. In his new book, former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura lays out his philosophy on marijuana and why he's always been in favor of legalization. And we welcome Jesse Ventura to the program. Governor Ventura, thanks for being with us this morning.
Well, great to be here.
So have your attitudes personally towards marijuana, both the use of it and the regulation of the drug, changed over the years?
Probably not. Not fully, because, you know, I'm 65 years old now, and I grew up in the 60s at the height of the, you know, and although I went in the military right out of high school, it was still the Flower Children, the hippies, Jimi Hendrix, and that whole era of the 60s decade where marijuana became very prevalent in society. And then, of course, the war on drugs started immediately after, as Vietnam was ending. They needed a new war, so they created the war on drugs, Nixon did. So, no, I've always felt, you know, having done both alcohol and actually tobacco, too, because I chewed Copenhagen for nearly 20 years, you know, smokeless tobacco, and having done marijuana in my lifetime, marijuana was the least dangerous, the least of all of them. You know, alcohol and tobacco are far worse. I've always felt that way throughout my entire life. And what did it for me now, though, is marijuana has given me back my quality of life in the fact that a seizure disorder happened within my life, not necessarily to me, but I was dealing with it. And all the pharmaceutical drugs didn't work, four different ones. And the person was put on, went to Colorado and went on what they called medical marijuana, three drops under the tongue three times a day. The seizures have stopped. The quality of life has resumed, completely weaned off the pharmaceutical drugs. So it is completely the marijuana that has cured the epileptic seizure disorder. And at that point, I felt that I needed to make it a focus of the rest of my time on this planet. I want to see marijuana legalized across the country so that other people don't have to suffer.
Well, the policy decisions that have been made certainly have had an effect, as you say, on how people are using marijuana and the extracts from that plant. In your book, in your manifesto, you want to see full legalization of medical and recreational marijuana and hemp. And I wonder how you can frame your thoughts about how the government should be involved in regulating marijuana. Do you want to see it on the same level as alcohol, or, you know, you even mentioned tobacco there?
Absolutely. Why not? What, like, I've had people say to me, well, what do I do if it's legalized and I catch my 13-year-old with a joint, with pot? I look at the people and say, parent, that's what you're supposed to do, parent. Treat it the same way as if you caught that 13-year-old using tobacco or if you caught that 13-year-old drinking. And I can assure you, having grown up, the gateway drug is not marijuana, it's tobacco. Tobacco is the first thing a kid tries. Then it's alcohol, then third might be marijuana. But we've been lied to about this plant. Do you realize today, think about this for a moment, do you realize today that if George Washington and Thomas Jefferson were both alive today, they would be raided by the DEA, they'd be probably doing 10 to 12 years in the federal penitentiary for being major drug dealers, because both of them, their major crops were marijuana. It was the backbone of our economy in this nation for 160 years, but we're not taught that in our history books. We're not told any of that. I learned that doing research for this book and was astounded by it.
Well, not to mention all of the problems they'd be in for all those slave owning that they did.
Well, that's a whole nother topic. The point I'm getting to is the economic. Marijuana was the major cash crop of this country until the invention of the cotton gin. If they would have never invented the cotton gin, it would still be marijuana. In fact, the British during the colony days ordered us to grow it because they needed it for their big armadas and their colonialization of the world with their big fleet out of England, because it has so many uses to it. And for those of you that are religious out there, okay, if you're religious, then you believe then God made marijuana. What right do we have to destroy what God made?
Well, when it comes to the regulatory picture, the one difference that marijuana has from other of those regulated substances we talk about, like alcohol or tobacco, is nobody is trying to figure out how to use alcohol or tobacco to heal sick people. And that's where the regulation gets sticky. And you write about this in great detail in your book. You talk about how the government has patented certain extracts and certain chemicals from the marijuana plant, in particular CBD, cannabidiol. For those of you who people that are unfamiliar, can you tell me a little bit about what CBD is and how the government's involved?
It's another form of marijuana that does not make you high, but it seems to have great medical help. But let me make something clear from my friend Tommy Chong, who I dedicated the book to. The entire marijuana plant is a medical plant and should not be divided into recreational and medical. That shouldn't happen with it, because those that smoke it for the euphoric feeling are doing it for mental health. Now, I would rather have someone take a hit of pot for mental health than I would see them being put on Prozac. Why do we need the government being our parents? We live in what's supposedly a free society. I should be able to put anything in my body that I want to, as long as I don't harm anyone else. How do you commit a crime if it's a consensual crime, a crime against yourself? In a free society, that's absurd. And that's what this whole thing is. If people desire to use marijuana, what right does the government have to tell them they can't?
So, for instance, this legislation, like all legislation in some of these states, is written with a lot of caveats. And I wonder if you see...
Because they don't want to legalize it. They don't want to, you know, it's ridiculous. And this is an issue. You got the Trump factor out there. You got the Bernie Sanders factor out there. Believe it or not, they wanted the same thing, but they didn't know it. They wanted a clean house of Washington. Well, this could be the issue to do it, because over half of Americans now, well over half, are for full legalization. And yet it's the federal government that won't allow it. It's time for us to stand up and tell the federal government, we are the boss, not you. You work for us, and you're to do what we want you to do. And we want marijuana legal, and it is not your job to keep it from us in what is supposed to be a free society.
What are some of the concerns that you have about how some of the medical marijuana laws that voters will go and determine whether or not they want that to be legal in their state, how that can change the picture of how people could obtain and use marijuana?
We've been lied to from the start on marijuana. In our history books, we're not told that it was the backbone of our economy for the first 160 years of the United States existence. We're not told that the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and Betsy Ross's original flag are all made out of marijuana, that marijuana is synonymous with our country, always has been, and it was only because in the 30s when the white power government decided to use it racially. William Randolph Hearst had 26 newspapers. He had thousands of acres of timberland. He wanted to corner the market so he couldn't use hemp, which is better paper anyway. He used his power in Washington to buy off the politicians. They outlawed marijuana with Harry Anslinger was the big guy for the government. And then he went on a binge thing with his 26 newspapers using racism, calling it the devil weed that black people smoked, that the ones that will rape your daughters and your wives, and that Mexicans, people, brown people smoke it. That's why they're lazy. And all this stuff went out in his 26 newspapers. Basically propaganda propagandizing a plant that has tremendous, tremendous use. You can make biodiesel fuel out of it. You can use it. It's read Steve Cubby's introduction to my book. Have you read it?
Yeah.
What do you think of that? Here's a guy dying of adrenal cancer, non-operable. He's given a five-year death sentence. He's alive today, 35 years later, attributed completely to marijuana.
That is the big issue.
The problem is you can grow it.
The problem is, though, will you be able to grow it when...
See, the government would tax you for the air you breathe if they could do it. And the problem with marijuana is, like, I grew up in South Minneapolis, and every summer my mom would carve up half of our little backyard in the heart of the city center, and she grew tomatoes. So we would eat fresh tomatoes all summer long, right? Well, you could do the same thing with marijuana. You could grow it. Therefore, the government doesn't get a cut, do they? Big Pharma doesn't control it then, does it? And corporations lose control then, right? That's the real rub. Plus, you got the federal government that makes money off keeping it illegal. Marijuana is the only thing that is decided by a law enforcement agency. The DEA makes the determination on marijuana, not the people we elected. In no other thing does law enforcement get to set the rules or the laws for anything except when it deals with marijuana, and that's because the politicians are cowards, and they won't take a stand on it, and they won't realize how we've been misled that this plant is unbelievably good for society, and yet because you can grow it yourself, that's the rub. They don't want to allow anyone to be able to grow it themselves because then they don't pay taxes and they don't support the corporations that will own it.
When you have states, there are states that have legalized marijuana for medical use, but yet it's still categorized as a Schedule I narcotic. That just seems...
because the DEA does the categorizing. Why are they allowed to do it? Because they're making money. Read the book, too, how wonderful the DEA is, how they've broken into homes on multiple occasions, shot and killed people, and then found out later they had the wrong address and no one's held. I guess it's collateral damage at war. Whenever you have war, you have collateral damage. Well, this is a war, too, and we have collateral damage. And let's look at the bigger picture. Because of the war on drugs, that's what's caused the militarization of our police forces. And that's what's caused this mindset of shoot first, ask questions later. Because that's the way they deal in the war on drugs. We need to end the war on drugs.
Do you think that this will be something that has to happen state by state, the legalization of marijuana?
Yeah, the feds can't do it because how would they justify all the people that are in their corporate-run prisons today? That's another thing. You got prisons being turned over to corporations now. That means they're beholden to the stockholders. That means the prison must be full so that the stockholders can make profit. Profit-making with prison. Plus, they're using prisons for slave corporate labor, where corporations come in then and subcontract. We talk about this in the book, too. They subcontract out at slave labor, a buck an hour stuff, and they got prisoners making all their stuff that they're selling. It's a whole system all created because of the war on drugs, and it needs to end.
We're talking with former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura. He has a new book called Jesse Ventura's Marijuana Manifesto. It talks about the legalization of marijuana, which is something that is a ballot measure in one form or another in 9 states this fall. So, Governor Ventura, not to make a pun here, but it seems as if this issue is kind of a grassroots issue, that it is becoming something that
It has to be, because, as I said, the feds aren't going to, they're making money off it. Plus, look at their seizure laws. How can those stand up where they can come in, take people's homes, take people's car, and you have to get a lawyer? In other words, you're guilty till you prove you're innocent. Well, our legal system's supposed to be the opposite. You're innocent until proven guilty, but not in the war on drugs. You're guilty, and you have to prove then that you're innocent. And I want to see an end to all this, because this is destroying the very fabric of our country, the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. And it creates so many more negatives than dealing with the drug situation like adults. Let's deal with it like adults. Now, why should you be criminalized? How can you be a criminal for what you do to yourself with addiction? Addiction's a medical problem, yet we choose to treat it criminally. I'll give you a hypothetical. Sure. If you could magically make caffeine a drug and coffee disappear tomorrow, what do you think the results would be tomorrow morning if people couldn't get their caffeine addiction?
I can tell you one thing, a lot of people would probably not make to work.
There you go. And that's an addiction. Caffeine is a drug. Why is caffeine legal? That's speed.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about, as I mentioned, this is an issue that has been an outsider issue for decades, and now it's starting to see prominence. And I wonder what you think about what's going on with the national scene of politics right now. You won the gubernatorial election in Minnesota on the Reform Party ticket. And you've been associated with the Libertarian Party. What do you think is happening right now with the two-party system?
It's a two-party dictatorship, as my friend Ralph Nader always called it. It's a fix. The whole election's a fix. You saw that in the Democratic when the emails came out that were pirated. They went after the messenger instead of the message. The message was, it showed clearly that everything was fixed against Bernie Sanders, that Hillary was going to win, so therefore the election's a fix. It's also fixed in the fact that third-party candidates are not allowed to debate. I'll use me as an example. I was polling 9 to 10% at Labor Day. I was allowed in the debates in Minnesota, and in 60 days I became the governor of Minnesota after polling high single digits, because I was allowed in the debates. They're not going to let that happen again because they're in control ever since Perot in 92, and they took it away from the League of Women Voters. So it's a big fix. I think you've got the greatest opportunity. Both of these candidates' negatives are higher than their positives. Don't you think the people deserve a third or fourth voice to be able to hear and be able to say, you know what, I don't even like these two. I'm going to vote for this other person. But yet, we're not allowed to do that, and yet we think we have fair elections. They're not fair. They're rigged from the get-go by the Democrats and Republicans. That's one thing you'll see the Democrats and Republicans work well together on, keeping any third entity out of the picture.
Do you think that Donald Trump's success, he's not an establishment Republican or didn't start out as one, do you think that his success is reflective of people trying to look for a third way?
Yeah, and so are Bernie's. The problem was this. Bernie's people and Trump's people wanted the same thing. But one so far left and the other so far right, they could never meet. What they wanted was a cleansing of Washington. They wanted the status quo ended. The Trump people prevailed on the Republican side. The Bernie people did not prevail on the Democratic side. And then Bernie sold out when he endorsed Hillary. And I knew that was going to happen a year ahead of time because Bernie came to Minnesota and I went down to meet with him, possibly thinking, you know, maybe I'll endorse this guy. I like what he's doing. We need to clean up Washington, clear it out, start again. Yeah, that's my belief. But when Bernie wouldn't even talk to me hardly. He spoke with me briefly in a hallway, and I was able to ask him, I said, Senator, if you fail, will you continue with the third-party movement, or would you endorse a third candidate if you fail to get the nomination? He looked me right in the eye and said, no, I'll endorse Hillary. And I knew it was dead right there on his side, because he was not going to win in the Democratic primary. Wasn't, and it turned out I'm correct. It was all fixed. And second of all, by endorsing Hillary, in fact, he stabbed all those young people and all his followers, I consider, right in the back when he did that.
Are you supporting Gary Johnson or any other presidential candidate in November?
I support anybody but Democrats or Republicans. I support Gary Johnson. I support Dr. Stein. Anyone but a Democrat. We're never going to get change in this country until we stop voting Democrats and Republicans into office. As long as you continue to elect them, you will get the same government.
Hey, one final thing. This goes into this, I guess, the theater that we have on the stage between these two parties and how issues kind of don't
get... And the media is included. There's another reason why a third party can't meet the 15% threshold, which isn't a law. They just picked that out of the air. Here's why you can't meet it, because the media will give third-party candidates less than 1% of the press. 99% of the press goes to the two parties. And when you got the media paid off by the same corporations that are paying off the politicians, it's one big happy family that controls the country, with the media being part of it.
Well, you spoke to students at Harvard about how pro wrestling prepared you for politics. And Trump has a relationship with the WWE. Does Trump's showmanship and his theatrics have a familiar ring for you?
No, not at all, because he wasn't a pro wrestler. He was, all Donald Trump did was host two WrestleManias.
Was he, is he a wannabe? Does he look at you guys and say,
no, he's a businessman. You people are always trying to make Donald into things. I've known him for 25 years. Donald does business. And like he's told me, he said the WWF was the two fastest sellouts he ever had in Atlantic City. Now, if they're your fastest sellout, wouldn't you do it again? He did it the first time, beat boxing, beat everything. Biggest sellout he ever had. So he brings it back a second year. I call that doing good business.
But it's also entertainment, and entertainment is business. And that's
so
what I want.
We live in a world of entertainment. That's a problem with this country. This country bases its focus on being entertained today instead of working and sleeping correctly. It's the 8 hours of how do we get entertained that are the most important to us. We're like Rome. Read history. The United States and Rome look like twins.
I think that a lot of people would agree with what you're saying, but I wonder how we try to get a system, especially when it comes to the media's attention, that makes people be more thoughtful and want to be less entertained and more informed.
Well, you do like I did. I just signed with Russian television.
And what will you be doing with Russian television?
I'm doing my own show.
And why
political show.
And they don't
censor me. I can talk about anything I want to talk about. I met President Putin last December. He assured me I will have complete artistic freedom. Isn't that amazing that the Russians give me something that, and in the United States, I got 34 major media entered my lawsuit case and helped overturn it at the appeals level. So now I have to try the case again. Tell me about our free press and how wonderful they are in this country.
Any impressions on Putin from meeting him personally?
Yeah, I found him exceptionally intelligent, and I found him truthful, because they had been carrying my internet show for a year, and they never once told, they never censored it, they never did any, they played it in its entirety the way I did it, except for swear words, because I was on the internet, and occasionally on the internet you can drop a swear word that they'll have to bleep out over television. But other than that, they never once told me about content or restricted what I did at all. I was truly amazed, and I lived through the entire Cold War. You know, I'm born in 1951. And so for me, it's unbelievable that I now work for Russian television.
That is truly an amazing path.
I wanted to do it too, to have it on my resume. And I wanted to do it because of my father, my mom and dad. My mom and dad were World War II veterans, and my father had 6 bronze battle stars and finished in Berlin. He didn't talk much about the war, but he did talk about the great friendships he made with the Russians in Berlin. They were allies. And yet before the war was even over, they became our bitter enemies for the next over 50 years. And so what I want to try to do, I want to try to bridge the United States and Russia and make us friends, which is what we ought to be. And then I'm going to have fun with you when I state this. After all, shouldn't we be friends with Russia? They're white.
Oh, Governor Jesse Ventura.
We don't seem to want to be friends with Mexico. We're going to build a wall to stop the brown-skinned people, according to, you know, the Republicans, which is absurd. But, you know, the Russians are white people. You'd think we'd want to be friendly with them. I mean, they've, you know.
Well, it has been a while since we've had a war with Caucasian people. So maybe that's the xenophobia factor coming in there.
Let's remember this for a moment. The war in Syria is only 250 miles from the Russian border. How many miles is it from our border?
Sure.
I would think Russia has more interest in that war and should have more interest in that war, because it's only 250 miles away from them than we do.
And they certainly do have interest in it, and they have.
And they should.
Yeah.
What's our interest in it?
Well, exactly. I think our interest in it is trying to put Pandora back in a box that we opened a long time ago.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, hey, I got to say, this has been a great conversation. And
thank
I really,
you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on and letting me speak my mind. It's rare in the U.S. today.
Well, you're welcome to do it anytime on our airwaves. That is the truth. Former Governor Jesse Ventura, the author of Jesse Ventura's Marijuana Manifesto and a star on Russian television. It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC.